Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
To introduce my next guest, can I share with you a tiny bit of my own journey with work? For nearly four decades, I've worked in secular broadcast media. I've dabbled in a fair bit of Christian ministry alongside that, often because of it. But very often, with some of the things said by people in so-called full-time Christian ministry, I've been made to feel as if I've kind of chosen second best, that Christian ministry is the main game, even the only game, and those like me, and I know many of you, who feel called to stick it out in the workforce, we could have done better. I think this is quite an important issue, which is why I'm so thrilled to begin a new Open House series with author Paul Stevens on Taking Your Soul to Work. He reckons whether you're a journo, checkout chick, plumber, a gardener, church pastor, a salesman or business executive, whether you mow lawns, fix leaky taps or save lives in an emergency room, you can put your spirituality into practice, grow in your faith and make a real difference in the lives of those around you. The Monday to Friday kind of work of 9 to 5. Paul, welcome to Open House.
Thanks so much, Lee. It's just great to be with you.
Really excited about this series. Thank you. We're going to kick off first, Paul, by focusing in on what you call the deadly workplace sins, which sounds to me quite ominous. But before we do, I'd love to hear about the conversation that first led you to this book being written.
Yes, well, my friend Alvin Ung was my student at Regent College in Vancouver, a very bright, wonderful, and discerning person. And we started to have coffee together and do things together and talk and share and pray together. And out of this, we hatched the idea of writing an East-West book, because most books from the West get translated into the East. But he's a Malaysian and Chinese, and he brings a special emphasis, I think, from that perspective to it. So we're just really excited to explore this. But we felt one of the critical things for us to do was to explore the what we call the soul-sapping struggles that people experience in the workplace, because I think a lot of people think that work itself is a hindrance to the spiritual life, and of course the basic assumption of our whole book is just the opposite. It's an arena of spiritual growth.
Mm. I think a lot of us think their work is just the job that brings home the bacon and nothing more. Why should we start thinking about our work as a spiritual practice, as you call it, even a calling from God?
Well, that's right. And I think it comes from a biblical perspective on work, which starts with God the worker. And God isn't just saving souls. He keeps the world running, and he's a mender and a fixer and a consummator, and he is the person who is infinitely creative. And so he invites human beings to enter into his creativity, his sustaining work, his fixing work, and his consummating work, so that when somebody tells me they're leaving business and going to do, as you were saying in the introduction, a superior form of work in Christian ministry, I say, well, what were you doing before? You were doing the Lord's work before.
Yes.
So behind the book, really, is this fundamental assumption that work is meant to be a dignity. It's meant to be part of our humanity, and it's a good thing for us to work. And, in fact, work is an arena of growth and development of our spiritual lives.
Because to think otherwise or be made to think otherwise actually becomes quite a pressure on people in the workplace.
Well, particularly, I think, for people that are committed to so-called Christian activities. I mean, they may feel like I've got to spend more and more time in church or doing this or that kind of religious activity to really be doing spiritual things, whereas actually the work itself. You know, a fascinating question to me is, if you were independently wealthy and never had to work, would that be a good thing for you spiritually? I think it'd be terrible.
That's a very interesting question, yes.
And, you know, it's interesting, the Puritan William Perkins even dealt with that, and he used very strong language and railed against the people living on wealthy estates that never had to work and so on. And I think it leads to a kind of slothful lifestyle, which, by the way, is one of the seven deadly sins.
Yes, which we're getting to. I wonder whether you've got a story. I always like to be practical with these kind of questions. Have you got a story that illustrates somebody out there, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, exercising that spiritual practice and fulfilling that calling from God?
Oh, tons of people. Of course, the obvious ones are doctors and teachers and folks that are in direct people helping work. But, you know, yesterday I went and gave a blood sample, and the technician who drew blood, by the way, do you look when they draw out those vials of blood? I don't.
I sometimes force myself to.
I just don't have a stomach for it. But anyway, I was chatting with
her.
You're not alone. And affirming, I just said, what you're doing is really important. It's a way of loving your neighbor. And I said, you can't always see the sort of end product. And then she said to me, she said, you know, you're right. This is where it all begins, diagnosis, maybe surgery down the road or medication or whatever. So, you know, even in seemingly technical jobs like that, they are ways of loving your neighbor, and it's an arena of spiritual growth as well.
I can only begin to imagine what that did to her and how that day became so good after that simple comment.
Well, you know, not everybody listening to this program is going to be a church goer, but I can tell you that in all my years of being in church ministry and church life, when I've been sitting in the pew, I almost never do I hear any kind of affirmation, support of, or prayer for people that are working in factories, people that are working in the school system, that's a secular school system, folks that are involved in technical trades or in computer science or whatever it may be. People who get support and prayed for are usually young people going on a short-term mission, clergy from other places, and retired professors from Regent College like me. So, and of course, I don't think that's a good thing at all. And I tell folks in the church that you can actually change the culture of a local church in 52 weeks by not giving airtime to missionaries and pastors. For 5 minutes every Sunday, just bring an ordinary member up, interview them. What do you do for a living? What are the issues you face in your daily work? What difference does your faith make? And how can we pray for you in your daily ministry? And that is transformative in churches that have done that.
Yes. How I'd love that seed of a thought to transform many churches around Australia from tonight. Paul, let's talk about those deadly workplace sins I mentioned at the top. It's very dramatic sounding. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, in the history of the Christian church, there has been a, you might say, a honing of what are the problems we face in life, not just in work. And it's very parallel to something that actually is in the New Testament. It's called the works of the flesh in Galatians 5, but they're almost identical. You know, pride, greed, lust, gluttony, anger, sloth, envy. And we've added, for the sake of uniformity in the book, two more, restlessness and boredom. You know, these are not actually sins. They're inclinations that lead to sin. So, like, in no court of law would you ever have, for instance, somebody being charged, sent to prison for pride.
No.
Or for sloth, or for envy. But these lead to all kinds of relationship-destroying and creation-destroying activities. So that's, it started way back with a Christian monk by the name of Evagrius, and then was developed by various church leaders through history. It started with 8, and then it was 7, and so on. But throughout the history of the church, people have recognized, yes, these are soul-sapping struggles that we experience in everyday life.
Paul, what's the point that you're trying to make in highlighting those deadly workplace sins?
I think we're trying to say that because we have struggles, we're actually hardwired for something better, and that the Creator has built into us a capacity to become mature human beings, and mature human beings that would love God and love our neighbor and love creation and care for it and develop it appropriately. And the fact that we have these struggles is a kind of sign that, you know, we were made for something different, made for something more. So I think these highlighted, let's call them inclinations towards sin, pride, greed, lust, and gluttony, and so on, are actually opportunities for us. And I think we want to highlight these, not because we want people to feel awful and so on, but to recognize we all struggle with some of them, and
yes,
some of us struggle with all of them.
Yeah.
And instead of that being a judgment and a sign of condemnation, it's really an opportunity for growth.
Yes, I wouldn't mind exploring a couple of them in some detail. Perhaps starting with pride. There are a few different kinds of pride. How do we see it manifest, in particular in the workplace? What should we be on guard against?
Well, with regard to pride, it's essentially this is the fundamental problem of human beings, which is autonomy. You know, Adam and Eve, in the Genesis account, were in the garden, and the tempter said, you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. You can be independent. And the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in that story represents the possibility of having provision, pleasure, and power, good for food, a delight to the eyes, and the fruit was also desire to make one wise. Having those independently of dependence on God and communion with God. So pride is, I'm a self-made person. I can do it. Now, of course, a lot of people would say, and I fully agree here, that there is a sense in which some pride is good, a sense of the value of our own person. And so we don't mean by pride this sense of being a valuable person, esteemed, and esteeming ourselves even, which I believe is really what God wants us to have with regard to our attitude towards ourselves.
Yes.
But in the workplace, pride comes out in a kind of arrogance and autonomy and, you know, being unwilling to trust other people even with a task or a possibility.
And I suppose the opposite of it being humility, what an example to see in the life of anyone, Christian or not, at work,
yes,
in the workplace.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's quite interesting that some of the researchers in really excellent leadership in, say, businesses come out saying humility is one of their qualities.
Oh, yes.
Humility isn't being down on ourselves. And I always like to, if I'm wearing a jacket and I'm talking to a group of people, I take it off and put it inside out with all the rough lining and everything else. And then I'll say, look, you know, when you're totally down on yourself and you're emotionally beating yourself down, that's like pride turned inside out. It looks like humility, but it's really false humility.
Yes. Yeah.
Real humility is a sense of the greatness of God and an appropriate view of our own person.
On Open House, we're with author Paul Stevens, part one of our series, Taking Your Soul to Work. Paul, can we explore the deadly workplace sin of envy as well? How does that work out? What should we be aware of there?
Interestingly, the subtitle for envy is the pain of seeing someone else advancing, or the pain of another's advancement.
Yes.
And I think that's really what envy is all about, is it's a discontent. It's a sense of, I wish I were so-and-so, or I wish I had somebody else's gifts. And it's fascinating, the Puritan William Perkins, really, in his fascinating treatise on calling, expressed this. He speaks about it, the pain of seeing someone else advancing, someone else's calling being so rich and so fruitful and so on. And that's where envy, I think, it gets expressed, a discontent with our own situation and a discontent with our own capacity and gifts and personality that has been given to us by our Creator.
Another one of the deadly workplace sins is sloth that you mentioned, and it's not just about laziness.
Pathological busyness is the other flip side of sloth, I think, but actually in the world today, there isn't much room for sloth because in the global economy, people are working harder and harder and harder.
Yes.
If you remember, in 1960-something, there was a U.S. subcommittee of the Senate that actually forecast that by the late 80s, we would only have to work 30 hours a week. And the exact opposite has happened. People are working harder and smarter and longer and everything else. But so sloth is a problem for some people, and Proverbs rails against it. But I think there's a moral sloth, which I have to say very personally, I have struggled with. And I think it comes out as a kind of workaholism. And it's a carnal love, not of ease, but a carnal love of work, where work becomes your idol and it becomes a thing you have to do. And you find all your meaning in life in your work. And so that's, in my view, the flip side of the kind of lazy sloth. There is a drivenness. I've really struggled with this myself.
It's a great insight. How do you overcome that then?
Well, I think for myself, I, first of all, really had to come to terms with the fact that I was a driven person. There was an elder in our church, and I was a staff person at the time, and he came to me and he said, Paul, I don't know why you are such a driven person, but I think it would be a good thing if you found out. And I'm so thankful for that man, because he really nailed me in an area of need. And so I began to explore, what is it that makes me want to work so hard, so continuously, and find the meaning of my life in it, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's one aspect of it, is you might say, a fearless moral inventory with your own person, which somebody else can help you with. But then I think we need co-conspiracy for health. I think we need, in my case, it's my lovely wife, Gail, is just wonderful in helping me. But I think a very, very critical thing is to recognize this is a spiritual problem.
What a gift of a comment, that one simple comment from that man to you.
Yes, it was a tremendous gift. And I think that one of the great spiritual disciplines that comes out in our book later on that helps us deal with drivenness and workaholism is Sabbath.
The rest.
Eugene Peterson once said, if you can't afford to take one day a week for rest, you're taking yourself too seriously.
Yeah. What great wisdom. Can I also explore with you the last of these workplace sins that I wanted to look at? Restlessness, which fascinates me. It's the desire to run away.
And I think we've got, in many ways, a society where people are restless. They're looking for the perfect job, the perfect assignment, and they'll move and switch and, in many cases, move cities and countries to try to find, to better themselves and to try to find a more satisfying work and workplace. And this restlessness, I think, is something in us. We're just not satisfied where we are. I remember reading in Paul's letter to the Philippians once, he said, I've learned the secret in every and all situations of being content. And when I read that, I thought, I think I've learned the secret of being discontent. and then I looked down farther on the page, and I discovered the secret of being content, besides taking creative action when you're discontent, but is in everything by prayer with thanksgiving. I think thanksgiving is absolutely critical to our sense of being content where we are and with what we're doing.
Yes. Paul Stephens, I'm sure this conversation has been of enormous importance to many people around Australia tonight, certainly to me. I'm so grateful for your time. Next week, we're going to look at the antidotes to the deadly workplace sins. We're calling them the workplace virtues. I enormously look forward to that, Paul. Thank you so much for joining us on Open House.
Thanks so much for joining.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.